is on the podium,
where Olympic and Paralympic champions run through their steps to success. Me? I take the elevator. You know what I'm saying? You guys call it a lift. Whatever. With me is world record holding para-athlete, Scout Bassett. Hey, Scout.
Hey, Eliza.
How are you?
I'm good. Another training day ahead. It's supposed to be almost 80 degrees today.
Ugh. And they still make you train? You don't get to just go home?
I know. Unfortunately not. But yeah, I actually really enjoy training in the heat, though. It's good to just sweat it all out, you know.
Wow. Well, it sounds like training is tough. Obviously, competition is brutal. And your days off are rare. So what is your ideal day off?
Okay. I live in San Diego. So my favorite thing to do on my off days is to go to the beach.
You're not tired of the beach by now?
No. I never gets old. I mean, I don't surf or anything like that. I'm not cool enough to do that. But I do enjoy going to the beach, having a little lunch or picnic, getting in the water, coming out, going back in, you know, just relaxing. And people watching at the beach is also a lot of fun and very interesting.
Okay. Well, also here is BBC's athletics commentator, Ed Harry. Day off, time to chill or out and about? What do you do?
Out and about. I'm with you, Scout, on the beaches. I grew up in the southwest of England, surrounded by coastline, just beautiful. Every day, if I could, I'd go to the beach. I now live in the northwest of England. Beach is not so good. Very muddy. Just not as nice.
I just want to point out that Ed and I finally have agreed on something.
Beaches. Beaches, yeah.
Y'all. We are into beaches. It's the only thing we see eye to eye on.
Wow. I am the exact opposite. Day off, I'm like in a movie theater from 9 a.m. on, in the dark, inside, zoning out. Yeah, I'm not much of an outdoors person. And I find that a lot of people who move to California, I also live in California, get really tired of the beach very quickly.
Really?
Yeah. Although I do like the boardwalks. If there's maybe some sort of janky Ferris wheel, shell, jewelry, any of that stuff, ooh, I do love that. You mentioned the beach and you're like, well, but I mean, I'm not surfing. Like, that would be the 20th thing I would think of to do at the beach. Like, but you're one of your first is, should I do this big athletic thing? So I'm wondering, when are you going to start surfing? Because it's clearly already on your mind.
Well, I have a funny story, okay? This, our producer may need to edit out the story. But so I went to Kauai, a couple years ago. And I have a really good friend who's also an amputee. And he, Mike Coates, he's a surfer. And a very, very good surfer. He's a below-the-knee amputee. So he's got his knee joint. But, you know, he's sort of pioneered the age of like prosthetics for surfing.
I was gonna ask, there are like waterproof prosthetics and stuff?
Yes, you need it to be salt waterproof because they rust. Yeah. Otherwise, I can assure you I've had a few of those. So, and he's also a professional photographer, videographer for many of like the high-end resorts and brands in Hawaii. Me being an idiot, I'm like, oh, I'm gonna look cute doing this. And I decide to wear a string bikini. Okay, I didn't think this through very well.
That you're about to get punched in the face by waves?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep. Did not think through that. Didn't even think about, oh, what if I fall off and the waves hit me? Like, what will happen to my suit? That didn't even enter my mind, okay? Let's say some Janet Jackson reference. I mean, just a little bit of everything. Top, bottom, everything, right?
Okay, a fish ran away with your bathing suit this day. Is what you're saying.
And it happened like several times, okay? To this day, I have never seen footage.
Oh, that's good.
From that event. And for no photos, no videos. And I've never asked for it. And thankfully, he's never brought it up. But I was like,
good. He's a good friend.
It was really embarrassing. I'm still mortified. Like, I can't even look at him the same way. I was like, oh, God. Every time I see him, like, oh.
I just love the idea of some octopus being like, I have a cute new bikini now.
Look what I found today.
Look at me.
Yes. Oh, but I do have one point I want to bring up about the beach that's kind of interesting. Here in California, where people will spend all day just laying out, So we go to the beach, and this happened the other day when I was with my friend. And, you know, I have a water prosthetic, and it's got a waterproof knee and a foot and all that. But, you know, there's tons of kids here, and I always feel a little, like, I don't quite know how to be, right? Because when I'm in my running leg, an athletic environment, I feel, you know, like I know what I'm doing, right? But when I'm at the beach, yeah, you're a little less clothed, and then there's kids, and then you can just see them. Like, it's almost like you become a spectacle. They're like, what is happening here? Oh, is she really going to get in the water? How does that work? But I actually have to say, I feel so much better now having a water leg, because up until like three, four years ago, I never had one. And that was even more of a spectacle. So I would just hop in and out of the water and on the beach. And I felt like that made me even more self-conscious and more exposed, because I'm not walking, and you know, of course, if you get in the ocean, it's hard to navigate the waves with one, but I always try to be nice to the kids and like, oh, you can ask, or if I feel like I'm in a bad mood that day, I'll be like, yeah, a shark took it, and then here I am back out here, which is really cruel, and then they don't want to get in the water.
Time we got on with the show and introduced our guest. Ed, who's on the podium?
Our guests today were part of the team that won Great Britain's first ever women's hockey gold at the Olympic Games. That moment in Rio in 2016 was also the first time that a same-sex couple had won an Olympic medal together. For Helen and Kate Richardson-Walsh, teammates since 1999, married since 2013, gold in Rio was them reaching the very top of their sport, and they did that together. Helen, Kate, you are on the podium.
Thank you very much. That was a nice introduction.
Yeah, we're so excited to talk to you today. We have some photos of you, and we wanted to use those to kind of guide our conversation. Ed, what's the first photo?
Our first picture is always our guest's greatest sporting achievement, and I've just been talking about Rio. It is Rio. It's that moment with the golds around your necks. You're all smiling. Some of you are shouting. The celebrations are underway. There are five of you in this picture, but I think it's one of those cases where this is actually part of a much, much bigger scene. You're both there. The only medal we can't see, I think, is Helen's, because you're clasping it so tightly in your hand. I'm just wondering, it's close to 5 years since this happened. Even now, when people take you back to those moments, how vivid are they for you, even now after quite some time has passed?
It's such good memories just looking at that picture, because in all of those faces, and I know if you'd obviously panned out and saw the whole squad, you would see just those individual people and kind of who they are kind of encapsulated. I'm just crying because that's what I do.
I think every time somebody introduces us as a gold medalist, it feels a bit surreal, actually. I can't believe it's been 5 years since we won that gold medal.
Yeah, I mean, it's Friday night, under the lights. Yeah, you know, like, it all just comes out in that moment, doesn't it? You'd almost sometimes don't really know where it comes from. I'm a really emotional person, so it's lurking just below the surface regularly. But it was, I think, just the... You know, for us, we'd been playing in the team for 17 years. The highs and the lows, mostly lows, to be honest. And I think it all just came out in a lot of tears and snot and everything else.
What was it that kept you all going and sustained over, you know, because it's easy to keep going when you're having so much success and to be motivated, especially when, you know, it's a lot of highs, but it's really, really difficult to push forward when you perhaps experience a lot more lows than highs.
Yeah, I mean, there's probably a few different things for me. I think firstly, so both of us went to the Sydney Olympics in the year 2000 when we were much younger. I was only 18 years old, and we didn't do very well there, and we ended up finishing 8th out of 10. But after that kind of that Olympic Games, I had a real ambition to want to be an Olympic champion. That was something that wasn't there when I was younger. I didn't ever think, oh, I want to be an Olympian, I want to be a gold medalist. That grew as I was actually within the sport. And that grew really strong. So that was something that was there that kept me going. The fact that we were going to tournaments and failing and not reaching our potential, I think that's also a thing that I'd always like get home and reflect and be like, oh, what can we do better? How can we improve? And it was that just that kind of almost like that chase to grow and be better, just improve. And so actually in some ways I feel quite grateful that the gold medal came at the end. It was an easy way to end at the right time when our bodies were also saying this is a good time to stop, and our minds were saying stop, and our ages were also saying stop, and our lives and stuff. So yeah, for me it was just that the chase that kept me going to just be better.
Unfinished business. It felt like the all the losses like just galvanized us. We didn't even qualify for the Athens Olympics 2004. And for me that was just like a sense of I never want to that to happen again, and I need to better the memories of the women that were there, because that is no way to finish your international career by not qualifying for Olympic Games. And so it really felt like we were all representing them from that moment on. It was that was really at the beating heart of it all. And I think players, you know, new players and younger players definitely bought into that, which was good.
That's so interesting. It sounds like you're saying there was more out there for you to experience and for you to do. And I think so many people would think the opposite, that it would be like, oh, this is too much of a bummer. This hurts too much. We should stop. But it makes a lot of sense when you put it that way. After having thought about this and worked for it for so long, once you were finally up there, did it feel the way you must have been imagining it feeling?
So I think we were also lucky in this regard, in that the fact that there have been some people who've been quite honest with how they have felt when they stepped on top of a podium. Certainly one that I remember was James Cracknell, who's a GB rower, who won multiple gold medals. And I remember him saying that winning gold didn't make him happy. And I was like thinking, what? This is what I'm chasing. This is what I'm going for. You know, what's the point if it doesn't make you happy? And I was, you know, really, again, grateful that I'd heard him say this, because if I hadn't, I would have been expecting something magical.
Yeah, trumpets. And I mean, I guess there are some trumpets.
And you come home and everything's just amazing. And it just, obviously it's not like that. And I remember a conversation that I had with Kate 2 weeks after we got home. We were just walking along the River Thames and just like saying, what was the point of any of that? And, you know, obviously I think I was in a little bit of post-tournament blues, and I was, yeah, obviously I was happy in that moment and, you know, thrilled that we'd achieved and we'd reached our potential and all that kind of stuff. But it wasn't going to necessarily define me. I think after the London Olympics, we played to our potential and we got bronze.
Yeah.
And I was just as fulfilled after that as I was after Rio.
Yeah, I find that group dynamic so fascinating. For so long with some of you, for in such a big group of people, I've had comedy partners, and that just with one person is a lot to manage emotionally. There must be all kinds of emotional management and interpersonal work that you all have to do.
Yeah, I mean, thankfully we had some brilliant psychologists, and we spent a lot of time with them. Really working hard at our interpersonal relationships and how we communicate to one another, how we give and receive feedback. You know, we did personality profiling, so looked at where some of the frictions were and why. Really helped just kind of give us a platform that felt a bit less, I don't know, emotive or intrusive, to be able to have some of those conversations, because, you know, well, this report said we should clash, let's have a conversation about it, rather than, you know, just me, you and me approaching me and saying, hey, we clap, let's talk about it. Yeah, that's a bit but no, and I think that I learned so much from having those conversations. You know, this was really helped me find some skills and tools to be able to have some of those hard conversations. And we weren't best friends. Like, you just can't dress that up anyway. We absolutely trusted and respected one another. But it's not realistic to think 31 or 28 people are going to be absolutely best friends. We had some best friends, and we all did, I think, in the team. But we made it able to work together as a professional unit. And I think that was the key.
Within that team, you're married as well. And how does that work, though, within the context of a sports team? I know you were teammates before you were a couple and before you were married. But how does the dynamic of having two within a bigger group actually work?
We weren't a couple for quite a long period, so we didn't get together until 2008. So there was, you know, a long period when we were friends. So that in itself, that change in itself was probably quite, and it was quite challenging for a lot of people. We just had to talk about it, which, you know, in the beginning of a relationship, and it's, you know, and it's all like honeymoon phase, you don't want to sit down with your coach and have a conversation about your relationship and how it might pan out. But that's what we had to do. Which was hard because he had some real fears, you know, if we were to break up, was there going to be like Team Kate and Team Helen and, you know, two camps against each other? And, you know, we just had to appease some of his fears and just talk about how we wanted to function as professional sportswomen and be at hockey as Kate and Helen, two separate people, and then away from that be Kate and Helen, the couple. And we talked about it with the squad and we had some really, really good conversations about how we wanted it to work, which I think really helped. And the team were amazing and the coaching staff were all amazing at just fully acknowledging our relationship and understanding how we wanted it to work as well, which was really good.
Yeah, I think there was also kind of a lot of learning for us too as individuals.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people do work with their spouse and, you know, managing that is a bit of a skill.
I want to quickly ask how both of you got involved in the sport of hockey and how that came about.
Yeah, so for me, you might see from one of the photos that I sent in, I've got three older brothers. There I am.
Look how cute
he is. They look like they're looking after me there, but they didn't. They beat me up on the regular. Why hockey? So then eventually I joined a hockey club. It was actually a men's hockey club because there weren't many clubs that were either mixed or just for females. So I joined with them and just went training every Sunday morning. And I think it was probably the one of the sports that I was best at out of all of them. And I really, yeah, just loved it. Just absolutely loved it. It was my safe space. I could just be me, that sport, playing hockey in particular.
You mentioned that your hockey club was sort of your safe space where you felt like you could be yourself. Was hockey always a safe environment for the LGBT community? Has there been an evolution there?
Yeah, I think certainly for women. So if we just talk about women, and I think it certainly has been from our experience. You know, in all the teams that we played in, there were gay women, lesbian women. And I think there's definitely been a change in how it has been spoken about. So yeah, certainly in the early teams, especially internationally, more so than club, it was known about but wasn't really spoken about. So which then, you know, questions, is it accepted? Mm. But over the last 20 years, it's now something that is known, accepted, talked about. You know, the difference that somebody can make when asking a question of, oh, do you have a boyfriend, rather than do you have a partner? So that question of do you have a boyfriend, when I first got into the team, was so intimidating. I hated it. And I was just waiting for somebody to ask me that question. I didn't have a partner at all. But in the back of my mind, because I didn't have a partner, I was like thinking, oh, you know, it was just that kind of anxiety, waiting for that question. Those things are kind of taken out now. You know, people are a lot more aware of different sexualities, and particularly in hockey. And so I do feel like it is a much more safe space to be out in that sense.
Yeah, but very much on the women's side. I think sport is globally, frankly, I think you can just see from the number of out male athletes that it is still very, you know, stereotypically, you know, masculine and all of the, what does that mean to be a masculine man and to play sport? And you have to fit in that kind of pigeonhole. I think it is changing. And I think it is, you're starting to see lots of different personalities and the different interests and hobbies that they have outside of sport, and bringing those to the fore, and just way more open conversations around lots of different areas of life. And I think that is only going to help that process. I mean, we always say there will be, you know, statistics will say there'll be lots of gay male athletes or bi male athletes, but that they'll be out to the people that they need to be out to. And outside of that, you know, that doesn't perhaps feel so safe for them right now. And you can see from the, you know, kind of abuse that people get on social media, why that would be such a terrifying thing to do.
Mm. You briefly touched on that, you know, in being or coming out. How did that affect you both in your careers or professionally? Yeah, to walk us through a little bit of that process.
Well, I mean, I was a bit late to the party. So I identified as heterosexual and had only dated guys. And then my first relationship with a woman was with Helen. And so I was 28, and it for me felt like the most natural thing in the world. You know, something, we were friends, but something changed and we got really close. And for me, it just felt totally normal. So, and my family were brilliant, and, you know, our friends and everything were really supportive. So that was, I was very lucky in that respect. But it felt like in the kind of bubble of our sport and in the bubble of our team, it felt very safe. And I think it was only sometimes on stepping outside of that I really realised, oh, actually, that's maybe not okay with everybody. And actually, this is really challenging for some people. And also just the paradox for me of being a gay or lesbian or bi woman in sport, and what it is to be that. So I remember I changed my hair all the time. I get really bored. Lockdown's been not good for me. And I decided to cut my hair really short. I'd always wanted to do it. It was 2011 into 2012. And we went to a tournament. And there's a picture of me, like, kind of muscles pumping. I'm as lean as I have ever been. And my hair's really short. It's like shaved in at the back. And I remember seeing this picture and it was like, what do I think about that picture? Because what we've been, or what I have been socialized and to think about gay women with short hair playing sport with muscles, looking aggressive, you know, that picture for me felt like very negative. But that's not how I felt. I felt like the most powerful, positive feeling in that moment. And actually, it was about reclaiming some of that. What does it mean to be a gay or lesbian or bi trans woman in sport? And can we reframe that and actually just talk about that individual person and who they are? So that kind of really started, I suppose, my journey of that identity and stereotyping and tropes and the negativity around some of that and breaking some of that down.
Yeah, so for me, I kind of had thoughts and feelings that I might be gay when in my kind of teenage years, and it was something that I did find quite difficult to come to terms with, if I'm honest. And the process of coming out was hard, mainly to my family and particularly my mum, and that was a hard conversation. I had to just say it, and I had to build myself up to say it and just say the words. You know, I knew she would always love me, whatever, so that I didn't have any fear of that, which I know people who have kind of been outed by their family, and that's a horrible place to be. And I knew that wouldn't happen, but I also knew she probably would be quite disappointed at some level. She's not like that now, and she's been amazing from day one, but I think it's a lot of stuff that we hold ourselves. Because we, as Kate said, we all kind of grow up, don't we, with what it is to be a person in the society that we live in. And then when you don't fit that, it's kind of the internal narrative that actually is probably the biggest struggle. So when I did come out, I think there was almost an immediate change of just me being able to just thrive and almost flourish. off the hockey pitch now. I could be myself, and that really did show to people who knew me really well, but also people who didn't know me hugely well. So it was obviously something that did make a big difference.
Why do you think that is?
I think probably because when you're hiding something, there's just this like kind of feeling of, I don't know, maybe shame that I was probably feeling a lot of. And having listened a lot to Brené Brown and all that she does and talks about, what is it? She says the antidote to shame is talking about it and vocalizing your shame. And so essentially by me coming out was then kind of being able to get rid of that shame a little bit and being accepted for who I was and still being loved and wanted and all of that kind of stuff. And I think I was then freed a little bit. I think there was bits of it that stayed with me because of the internal stuff that was going on, that actually just because I'm still loved on the outside doesn't mean that that's gone. There was still some work for me to do on myself, which obviously takes a lot longer. And I think probably still grappling with that a little bit, if I'm honest. You know, when Kate and I were talking about wanting to have children, it then came up again. It's like, oh, okay, I've just got around being in a same-sex relationship, but now bringing a child into that environment, you know, for me, that was like, no, you shouldn't bring a child into that environment because that environment is wrong. And that's all the stuff that I think we've all been brought up to believe. So I had to change it in myself first, even though I am in a same-sex relationship and I know that we would be, and I think are, amazing parents at the moment. Yeah, so it's pretty complicated. You know, I said we were simple. We're not. You look at me, weren't you, when I said that? I was like, we're not simple at all. I'm the most complicated person.
This is On the Podium with me, Eliza Skinner, Scout Bassett, and Ed Harry. Our guests are Olympic gold medalists Helen and Kate Richardson-Walsh.
When you come on to programs like ours, you're talking to us, but you're also talking to so many people, in the case of this broadcast, around the world. I mean, how often are you asked, or how often do people reach out to you about things they're coming to terms with their sexuality? Maybe they're a young person making their way in sport. Maybe it's got nothing to do with sport, but they're just kind of trying to find their place in the world. And they know because they've seen you and they've read about you. When people come to you in whatever forum, what advice do you give young people who may be in a situation not too dissimilar from the one that you were in, as you've just been describing?
I guess the advice we'd probably give is seek the support and build your support network around you, that the people that love you, that are invested in you, that want the best for you, all of you, they love you wholly.
Yeah, I think it's really hard to give advice. And I think the main thing is what Kate said. It's by us being ourselves, and I'm helped by a lot of other people who are themselves, you know, I could list a few, and it just helps you be seen. And that's what we all want to be seen, to be loved. And it just kind of helps with that.
Yeah.
That's why being able to have role models and the diverse role models is really, really, really important. Mm-hmm.
So I want to ask, I am a Paralympian and a Paralympic athlete with a disability, and I know one of the things that I struggle with quite often is I'm very proud to be an advocate and an activist for the Paralympics, my community, you know, and I have no shame in that. But I know so often that's sort of how I'm defined by, and how people label and see me as. How do you navigate that?
Yeah, I think I did struggle with that to begin with, for sure, definitely. And I shut myself off, so I didn't engage really in the conversation. I was kind of an ally, I suppose, to people that I knew and the people in my sphere, but outside of that was just afraid of exactly what you said, of being just solely thought about in that way. But now I've just got to the point where I actually, you know what, that is a really big part of me, and this is, I feel like it's really important to, it matters to me and I care about it. So, and I want to talk about it and I want to learn, because I don't know enough about anything. And so I want to just be curious and open up some of those conversations and listen. And that process will hopefully give me that ability to just to be proud of it and to talk about it and to really be out there as an ally. I think that's how I've tried to navigate it.
Yeah, I kind of also had a similar experience when I started talking about my struggles with my mental health as well. I think that's something that I really did feel like I was put in a bit of a box. And every time it's World Mental Health Day or something, you know, the people will ring me up and want to do a story, and it's like, oh, right, okay. I think in that sense, I just kind of thought about how people had, through them speaking out, had helped me, and so therefore me doing the same would help somebody else. And it's, and also just trying to, also just actually the most important thing is what I think and feel about myself, and really trying to identify and live to my own values, and that's kind of getting to grips with that is more important than what anyone else thinks. But I know how hard it is. I know it's tough.
I was also thinking about, Kate, what you were saying about that seeing that image of yourself and the way that image had previously been defined as a cliche of a gay woman, female athlete, strong, traditionally masculine haircut, all that. And I feel like that's so resonant about all kinds of gender issues and where they intersect with sexuality issues. As a comic, when I got into stand-up comedy, it was seen as a very masculine thing. And I feel like in those spaces, so often we have, a lot of people have taken the tact of saying, no, we're not like that. We're not like that cliche that you say female athletes are, or gay athletes are, instead of saying, no, we are like that. And it's really cool. It's super cool. Does that feel like the kind of redefining that you're having to do?
That is, yeah, ding, 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 ding. We talk about all that all the time. I'm really conscious of an app, but I'm really pleased that there are some really prominent out female role models who they look all different ways, different ethnicities, you know, different body shapes, different hairstyles, different, you know, every way different. And I think that's what we need to embrace, is that what does a gay, bi, lesbian, trans woman look like? All of these wonderful things, and they're all great.
I think it does still go on, but kind of throughout our career and a bit more early years, there were players who definitely were 100% straight, and they were going to make sure that everybody knew they were 100% straight. And by doing that, you're then saying that yeah, we're kind of okay with it, but that's actually wrong. And they, you know, being othered by the fact that they're wanting to make sure everyone knows they're straight. People won't really necessarily recognize that as being homophobic, but that is something that really hurts a lot, because yeah, without saying it, you're saying it.
It's that it's the shame that you were talking about. It's the same, like, this is something that I would be ashamed to have people think about me.
Yeah.
So I'm going to make sure they don't think that.
Absolutely. 100%.
There's still some of that. There's definitely still some of that underlying homophobia. Let's be honest, that's what it is. And I think the more we can unlock it and talk about it, the more uncomfortable conversations we can have, the better.
I want to ask about sort of the transition life away from sport. Granted, you have a daughter now, but what has that been like?
It's definitely hard.
Yeah, it's really hard.
There was really great support as well that we have for the Olympic sport. Certainly there's the English Institute of Sport, and we have a performance lifestyle advisor, and a lot of her role was to kind of get us ready for life after sport, basically. So we were as prepared as I think we could be.
And it has taken, to be honest, at least 3 years, I think, to really fully feel like, well, we still maybe still going through it. I think we did it for so long, and we were so ingrained and entwined into it, and I think as athletes, well, anybody, frankly, if you've worked a job or done anything for a long time, who you are and what that role is can become so entwined that it almost is one and the same. And so you think, well, if I stop that, I lose myself. And actually, at the core of it, I'm sounding like my therapist, at the core of it is still you and who you are and all that you are. And I think it's just that peeling just that layer away and doing something new. So it's definitely been lots of ups and downs.
Yeah. And I think we were also lucky because we won a gold medal and that opened a lot more doors than would have been there. And I think it was actually, there were some challenges within that, obviously, but it was a lot easier, I think, having been kind of ending on that note.
Do you plan to watch the Tokyo Games? And if you do, how do you think that's going to feel for you guys?
I think it is going to be hard, but we're potentially both going to be working, commentating from the UK, hopefully. So that'll think probably help kind of just make sure we can deal with it because, you know, well, hopefully I won't break down crying in the middle of the commentary.
If it's your brand, go with it.
I'm so going to use that line.
I do definitely think that that it was kind of a line in the sand for me last year, which obviously it didn't happen. So it will be interesting to see how it is, I think. But there is something a bit different about the Olympics, obviously. I did definitely kind of eye that up as, okay, once I get through that, I think I'm there. So then it didn't happen. I think that extra year has probably given me a little bit of bit more time. And actually, I think I'm in an even better place than I would have been last year. So, yeah.
Well, we've loved talking to you. Thank you so much for giving us so much of your time. It's been really fun.
Oh, our pleasure. Really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. It was lovely to chat to you all. Yeah, it did feel like therapy, actually.
They were so cool.
Wow. Yeah. There's so much, right? They shared so much about acceptance, about identity, about vulnerability. I mean, wow. I think that was one of the more profound, deep, you know, these are two women who clearly know who they are. They've embraced it. They own it. And I just love that. I love that you can clearly tell they have done all the hard and the deep work, right? The things that are oftentimes hard to do. And I think one of the hardest things in life is to learn to accept and to embrace the things that we cannot change about ourselves. And I just love that they have clearly done that. And it's been a hard journey and they've been very open about that. And I thought it was really telling that Helen said that, you know, she's still trying to work through some of that. And just shows, you know, we are never finished products. This is a lifelong journey. But gosh, I'm just in awe of these two women. And wow.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of times public figures are sort of expected to be performing their whole life.
Yes.
Like it's all like everything they do should be for the public to consume, rather than like, no, these are full people who need to examine how they think about themselves and how they think about their relationship and all of that. And I like that they talk about making that a priority.
My favorite takeaway from, maybe not my favorite, but right up there, was that journey. Kate talked about that this has been a 17-year journey, and that most of that has been a lot of lows. And only a few highs in terms of success and getting to the top. And I think that's really important in our culture and in sport to talk about because, yes, of course, there are the Michael Phelpses and the Allyson Felixes of the world and whatnot. But there's a lot of people who have great stories to tell and important and meaningful journeys. And that most of us probably relate more to the stories of those where, you know, you've had to persevere for a long time and you don't know if you're ever going to get to the top or reach that gold medal and you're still pushing through. I thought that was really, really deep and just a great application for in all areas of life, that just will to keep grinding, to keep getting better, to improve. Sometimes that's the most important part of the story and not necessarily the outcome.
Yeah. And I also love that Helen then framed it as part of the reason why they eventually got to the wind was having things that that they could think about and be like, well, what else? How can I do this differently? Rather than just being like, slam dunk, did it, perfect.
And how would their relationship with their sport have been if they had won that gold medal in 2000 when they were 18 and 20? Would they have continued for 17 years, or would they, it's really hard to know, isn't it? And we've talked to sports people, haven't we, and we've kind of had fun about, you know, you both do sports, how do you switch off? And they were seeming to say, you know, with all seriousness, it is strange that we've both finished. And even like after nearly 5 years of retirement from international hockey, we still miss it, and we miss it a lot, and we can talk about why we miss it. So sometimes it's incredibly useful to have someone who isn't just a sports person, but they were a sports person in the same team at the same time, and you both experienced exactly the same thing.
And I bet that all of those years of losses also go into that, because if they had won when they were young, as you were saying, and then had gone through this loss of the sport or like any kind of change, I think it would be harder to express like, oh, I feel weird and I feel like I'm losing sight of who I am, if they hadn't had 17 years of practicing little versions of that and having little losses that they know how to express with each other, like, oh, I'm disappointed, I feel sad today, I feel disappointed in myself. You know, that can be a scary thing for people to say to anybody. And that's it from this series of On the Podium. We hope you enjoyed listening as much as we've enjoyed making it. And if you've missed any of the series, then head to BBC Sounds or your regular podcast provider and take a listen back. In the meantime, from me, Eliza Skinner, Scout Bassett, and Ed Harry, bye for now.